Alright, so we'll say good morning. Let's get started. Today's daf is daf Yud Zayin, and we're going to start with Zayin Amud Beis. The shiur is sponsored by Helen Vicky Kane, in memory of Vicky's mother, Necha Bas Feivel, and her father, Meir Ben Avigdor, and hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, their neshamas have an aliyah. Alright, so what's we left off? Test Zayin Amud Beis, six lines up in the bottom. Darash Rav Nachman, Yishun Rabbeinu Shmuel. So Rav Nachman darshin the name of Rabbeinu Shmuel. Yochid nosnin lo beis sasayim. For an individual, I will say he was still focusing over here on how much space are we permitted to enclose with these inferior mechitzos for these individuals. So Rav Nachman said, name Rabbeinu Shmuel, that for an individual, we give him two beis saw. Beis, Nostin Luhu Beis Hasayim. Two people are just like one. They also get the two sub Beis Hasayim. Gimel, three people, Naasu Shayara, become a caravan. The Nostin Lohan Beis Shesh. And we give them the size of six Beis Saw. So the Gemara says, 1 second, Shavkis Rabbanan Ba'abadis Kaviosi Rabbi Yehuda. Are you leaving the position of the Rabbanan? Remember, also the Rabbanan said that you could go and enclose as much area as you want. And there's no chilik between an individual and the Shayara. And you're passing like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. To which the Gemara says, Hadar Okim Rav Nachman Amora Allah. Afterwards, Rav Nachman went ahead and got an Amora. Now, what's Amora means, we spoke about this before. The Tanoim would often have an Amora who was like their spokesperson, who was their conveyor of information, meaning the Tana would say something. But the Tana would just stay the halacha as it was, and it would be the job of the Amora to go ahead and say that in a way that is more pleasing to the masses. So after Rav Nachman said this, he said to his Amora, but Darash, Dvarim shamart lifnechem toz him biyadi. That which I said before was a mistake. Baram kacham, rather, this is the halacha. Yochid nostin lo beis asayim. For an individual, you allow him to enclose an area of two beis saw. Shnayim nostin lohen beis asayim. For two individuals, we allow them to enclose an area of two beis saw. So one and two are just like one. Shlosha nasu shayara, three become a caravan. Venostin lohen kol tzarchan. And are given the entirety, are given everything they need. Top of Yud Zayin. Reisha Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda, the Sefer Rabbanan. Is that to say that the first statement of this Braisa reflects the view of Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda and the Sefer Rabbanan? So the Gemara says, now first of all, look at Rashi. Rashi says, Reisha Rabbi Yossi bar Rabbi Yehuda, the Ka'amar Yochid the Beis Sasayim. Because Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion who holds that a yachid is only limited to two beis saw. The irabonon afilu the yachid kol tzarchu yavin. Because we also remember the fundamental machlokis over here is that according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, an individual is always kept at two beis saw. According to the rabbanon, you give the individual as much as he wants. To which the Gemara says, that is correct. Nishum dekoi avua bishitase. Because lemaisa, look at Rashi. In Mishum the Kaboy Abu Bishtase, his father holds like him, Rashi says, Gabi Yochi, Ka'am Rabbi Huda Nami, the Inos Tinlo Elabes Sasayim, the Mechitzos Shesi O Ore. So the Gemara says over here that when it comes to the situation of the Yochid, indeed Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Yossi's father holds just like him. Rabbi Yehuda holds just like him. And if the Yochid gets a Beis Sa'ah, two Beis Sa'ah, so because again, Rabbi Yehuda holds like his son, Rabbi Yossi, Therefore, the Maisa, the halacha follows them by the yochid. Okay. Amar Abidul Amarav. Shlosha b'chamesh asurin, b'sheva mutarin. So once again, remember, this is going to be an ongoing discussion regarding what area are you permitted to enclose with the inferior mechitzos mentioned in the Mishnah. So now Abidul says, name of Rav, that you can have the following situation. You can have three people in an area of five base saw, and it would be aser. B'sheva, or you can have three people in an area of seven beis saw, and it would be mutter. Obviously, at first glance, doesn't make much sense. Amrulei, Amr Rav Hachi. So remember, they said to Rav Gidl, did Rav really say this? Amrulei said to them, listen to this, Oraisa nevi'i uksivi, the Amr Rav Hachi. I swear by the Chumash, the Navi, and the Ksuvim, that Rav said this. All right. But if that's the case, how do we understand it? Hachi Amar Avashi, my kasha. So Rav Ashi said, what's the kasha? Dilma Hachi Kamar, maybe this is what Rav means to say. Chutzrichu l'sheish. Let's say, Abba, you had three people, and they needed six base sa'ah. for their usage. Their usage. They kifu b'sheva, and instead they enclosed an area of seven beisa, afilu b'sheva mutarin. Then lemaisa, they are permitted even with sheva. But we'll see what's the chaf over there. The logic behind Rav's statement is going to be that an enclosure of any area works as long as you don't have two base sa'ah of unused space. So therefore, if you have three people who needed six base sa'ah, but instead enclosed seven base sa'ah, that's fine. That's fine because it's not two base sa'ah of unused space. All right. However, lo hotzuchu ela l'chamesh v'kifu b'sheva, but if, let's say you had three people, and the three people only needed five base sa'ah, and they ended up enclosing for seven base sa'ah, then what? Afilu b'chamesh asurim. Then it will say, in that case where they have two extra base saw of unused area, then what? Then the whole enclosure is compromised and they can't use the area at all. I mean, they can't carry in the area at all.
Is that a contiguous area? Or?
This is all assuming contiguous area. All contiguous area. The Elohadik Tani, Ovilvach Lo Yehe Pesa Sayim Panoi. And that's which we said before, that you can't have two base saw open. My love Panoi Mi Adam. Do we not assume that it's opening means panoi, empty from people? So we'll say, what does that mean? You see, empty from people means, we'll both say that, if you notice, the ratios that we're working with is that a person, an individual, is pretty much given two base sa'ah. That's considered to be an area that would be used by a person over the course of a Shabbos. So, or within the course of normal usage. So the Gemara says, so when we say that you can't have two base sa'ah open area, so there are two ways of looking at that. It even means two uncleaned base saw, which means that a person, as soon as I'm in the area, I get two base saw. So, meaning having two extra base saw means that I have two more base saw than the number of people in my group. That's one possibility. Or panoi means panoi mikelim, which means it has really nothing to do with the number of people. What does that have to do with? Usage stuff, right? And there, so the Gemara says, so which one does it? When we say you can't have two extra base saw, what does that mean? Does that mean panoi mi adam? That there's not enough people corresponding to that number of base saw, or it means no, it's not a function of people, it's a function of usage. To which the Gemara says, my love, paname adam, when we say you can't have two extra base saw open area, does that not mean empty of people? The Gemara says, lo, paname kelim. It actually means empty of utensils, which means I both say that lemaisa, you can have a situation, well, let's say for example, you have three people. But the three people use very little area. They only use one base saw. But you enclose three base saw. According to this logic, if you had two base saw unused area, that would compromise the area. Itmar shows, and now you enter a very interesting shaila that has ramifications in many areas of halacha. Itmar shlosha, so we'll say, let's say the following. Let's say you started Shabbos with three people in your area. Three people here. Supposed to remember, three people in the area would give you how much space? Let's say up to. It's not really a fair question because it depends, right? But let's say off the bat we assume it would give you, let's say, six, two per person. Let's make that assumption for now. The truth is, again, remember, as you've seen before, it could give you 27. Everything depends on how much you need. But let's assume off the bat it gives you six. And now what happens? Baruch died MS. Someone passed away. Right? One of the chevra passed away. Right? Umeis echad mehem. Or, for example, Shnayim. Or let's say, for example, you began Shabbos, so two people in the Chabura, and what happens? V'nitosfu alehen. And then one person comes into the group on Shabbos. Suppose they hear what the Shaila is. The Shaila is, do the proportions change over the course of Shabbos? So you started Shabbos with three, now one died, does your permitted area diminish? You started Shabbos with two, now afterwards someone else came in, does your permitted area increase? So the Gemara says, Rav Huna Rabbi Yitzchak say, Chad Amar Shabbos Goremes, V'chad Amar Diurin Goremes. So we will say, one opinion says that Shabbos is the causative factor over here. Now look at Rashi, what does that mean? Shabbos Goremes, Rashi says, Shlosh Umeis Echad Mehen. Therefore, in the case of, let's say, you had three people and one of them died, Hoil Vigomeres Shabbos Lahatir Mutarin Hashnaim Afilu Rabbi Yehuda. So we'll say, what Shabbos Goremes means is that when Shabbos starts, Shabbos creates the reality. That as soon as Shabbos starts, that reality that exists at the beginning of Shabbos is frozen in place for the remainder of Shabbos. So if you have three people in the Chabura and one died, the entire space still remains permitted. Let's just finish that Rashi. He says, "Afilu Rabbi Yehuda Shnayim Veikifu Yosef Beis Asayim, Af Apish Netosu Alem Diurin Asur Rabbi Yehuda Hol Shabbos." Says similarly, if you have two people and they enclose an area with two extra base saw, unneeded base saw, and now a third person comes in, it's not going to help because everything is frozen. The reality is frozen in place at the onset of Shabbos. So the book says it's machlok. It's a chadam or Shabbos garbis. One opinion says that it's Shabbos that creates the reality, meaning whatever is true at the onset of Shabbos is the reality that remains throughout the duration of Shabbos. The chad amar diurin garmin. And the other opinion says, no, it's the residents that create the reality. And even if what Rabbi says, even if the residential reality changes over the course of Shabbos, that change in residential reality affects what? Affects the nature of the enclosure. So the Gemara says, Tistayim derav uro hudo amar Shabbos koremes. So let's say, remember, all the Gemara tells us is that it's machlokes Rav Huna and Rav Yitzchak, and doesn't tell us exactly who holds what. So the Gemara says, it would appear to be clear that Rav Huna is the one who says that Shabbos is Goremes, that Shabbos creates the reality. The Amar Rabba, Bo'imi Rav Huna, U'Bo'imi Rav Yehuda. He asked the following question of Rav Huna, and the following question of Rav Yehuda. Erev Derech HaPesach. So I said, this is talking about Erev Chatzeros, right? If you have two Chatzeros that open up into each other, remember, a Chatzer is a courtyard into which homes open up to. You have two Chatzeros that open up into each other, and you want to be able to carry in between one Chatzer and another, you can make what's called an Erev Chatzeros. We'll say, we mentioned these concepts many times, but we haven't spoken about them explicitly. The idea is, like most things in Judaism, you accomplish it through food. Right? You go ahead and you pool your food resources, and that makes it into one reshus. Therefore, the Gemara says, but in order to do that, you have to have an opening between the two chaseros. Okay? So the Gemara says, let's say, Irev Derech HaPesach, you made an Erev as a result of an opening, an entranceway between the two chaseros. Or v'nistam ha-pesach. And then what happens? Over the course of Shabbos, the doorway that connected the two chatzeros closes up. Or derech ha-chalon, or you had an open window. Remember, we'll say any opening could connect the two chatzeros. And what happens? V'nistam ha-chalon. And then what happens? We'll say over the course of Shabbos, right, the chalon is closed. Mahu. So we'll say, this is an incredible shaila. So now, again, the entranceway that was good at the onset of Shabbos that joined the Chatzeros is now closed. So the Shaila is, how does that impact my Eruv? V'Amar Li and Rav Huna responded, Shabbos, Hoyo V'Hutra, Hutra. Once Shabbos is permitted, which is another way of saying what Rav Osai, that the status of the Chatzer is determined at the onset of Shabbos. And as long as it was good at the onset of Shabbos, it remains good throughout Shabbos, even if circumstances change. We're going to see, by the way, this type of concept has fascinating ramifications. If you remember, we actually saw this in Shabbos already, by Muktzah, right? What happens if a particular status is Muktzah at the beginning of Shabbos and then changes its status over the course of Shabbos? So there's a whole it's all the same machlokas. Do Shabbos-related halachos get locked into their status at the onset of Shabbos, or do they change even over the course of Shabbos? So most of the Gemara now is proven to Stayim that Rav Huna is the one who holds that status gets locked in at the onset of Shabbos. So the Gemara says late, and therefore both say, if Rav Huna is the one who holds Shabbos Goremes, then it must be that Rav Yitzchak is the one who holds the urine garment. So the Gemara says Leimer Rav Huna Rav Yitzchak beplukta the Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda Kamifu. So we should say that perhaps Rav Huna and Rabbi Yitzchak are arguing in the same machlokes of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. What did Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda argue about? This not, because we learned. Chatzer shenifritza mishtei ruchosel. If you have a chatzer that was breached on two sides. V'chein bayis shenifritza mishtei ruchosel. Similarly, if you had a home that was breached on two sides. V'chein mavui shenitlu korosel olechayim. Or a mavui from which, again, the korah or the lechi were taken. Rabbi Yossi, all of these things happen on Shabbos. So the common denominator in all of these cases is at the onset of Shabbos, you had a properly enclosed area, and then what happened? Something happened. And the point is, it's no longer enclosed. The obvious shaila is, what's going to be the status of carrying in these areas. So the Gemara says, Mutarin la'os shabbos, va'asurin la'os lov de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that they are mutar for that shabbos, but asur going forward. So we'll say, what does Rabbi Yehuda hold? Rabbi Yehuda holds that status is locked in when? At the onset of Shabbos. And therefore, since it wasn't closed at the onset of Shabbos, I fell down, the korah's gone, the lechi's gone, the walls are gone, okay. It's still okay for this Shabbos, but obviously, future Shabbat, one Shabbos is over, it's an open area. Therefore, in order to carry in a subsequent Shabbos, you would have to repair it. Rabbi Yossi says, what are you talking about? In mutarin la'osa Shabbos, mutarin la'osa lavo. If it's mutar on this Shabbos, then it has to be mutar going forward. Then asurin la'osa lavo, asurin la'osa Shabbos. And if you're going to tell me it's usher next Shabbos, then what? Then it's usher this Shabbos also. Shabbos has another way of saying what? Don't give me any locked-in status. Look at what it is now. Is it an enclosed area? The answer is no. If it's not an enclosed area, you can't carry in it. All right, Vaharaya, what happens if you leave it this way next Shabbos? Next Shabbos, it's an unenclosed area. You can't. So Rav Yossi says, what does that make sense? How does it make sense to say that this Shabbos you can carry in it, next Shabbos you can't? Therefore, Rav Yossi holds that, no, you have to look at the circumstances. He phrases it in a more catchy fashion. If it's good enough this Shabbos, it's good enough next Shabbos. And if it's not good enough next Shabbos, it's not good enough this Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Lema Rav Huna, Damar Krav Yehuda, Rav Yitzchak, Damar Krav Yossi. So also, in Pashas, we would say that Rav Huna, who holds that Shabbos Goremes, Rav Huna holds that Shabbos Goremes, holds like Rav Yehuda, who holds that again, in this case, you can carry in the now unenclosed areas for the rest of Shabbos. And Rav Yitzchak, who holds the urine garment, that it's the residence, that's the circumstances that create the reality, would agree with Rabbi Yossi, who says the same thing. So Gemara says, no, I'm going to Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, no, don't confine me, don't limit me to just holding like one shita. Ana da amri afilu de Rabbi Yossi. I can hold even like Rabbi Yossi. How so? Ad kan lo ka'am Rabbi Yossi hasam, ela dilesnuhu lemechitzos. Rabbi Yossi, the cases are dissimilar. In the second case over here, Rabbi Yossi holds that, you know, I can't carry in this chatz. Rabbi Yossi, why? Because there are literally no mechitzos. Remember, what was the case? The case of the Mishnah was the walls fell down. The lechi or the korah is not there. There's no mechitza. So Rabbi Yossi holds in the case where there's no mechitza, you can't tell me that because it wasn't closed at the onset of Shabbos, that it's still like it's enclosed. Because why? Why? No, it's not enclosed. That's Rabbi Yossi holds that way. Hasam. But in my case, remember, what was Rav Huna's case? Rav Huna's case was where the area wasn't closed. But what happened? Nebuch, one of the Chevra died. But the enclosure is still there. Rabbi Yehuda, because the enclosure is still there, that's why I have the ability to say that the status that was present at the onset of Shabbos still remains. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzchak could say, Ana da amri afilu Rabbi Yehuda. I can hold it even like Rabbi Yehuda. Why? I can lo kama Rabbi Yehuda hasam ela de isnu le diurin. Because when does Rabbi Yehuda hold? Remember, I was saying Rabbi Yehuda is in the second brayse. When does Rabbi Yehuda hold that even if the mechitzos fell down over the course of Shabbos, as long as they were present at the onset of Shabbos, that you can still go ahead and carry there? That's only when there are still residents in the area. Hacha, in my case, says Rabbi Yossi. In my case, says Rabbi Yitzchak, less nuhu le diurin. In my case, says Rabbi Yitzchak. Remember what happened. One of the residents died, or one of the residents was added on. So because the residential circumstances changes, Rabbi Yehuda says, that's why I hold like I do. But in this next case, I can even hold like Rabbi Yehuda. So the verse is the following. The Chacham Omrim Echer Mishtei Dvar. So just by the way, just interestingly enough, the way we paskin in that, we have a little bit of a mix and match, meaning in certain respects, we paskin Shabbos Goremes. That's really in principle the way we paskin, that the status of many things legale Shabbos is forged at the time that Shabbos begins. That being said, when circumstances dramatically change, then lemaisa we go ahead and we don't ignore the circumstances. But there are many things for which we say, like for example, we saw in Hilchos Muktzah that if a kli was muktzah at the onset of Shabbos, it retains that status even if something changes over the course of Shabbos. On the other hand, if something was not muktzah at the onset of Shabbos and then something dramatically changes, we often would consider the item muktzah on Shabbos as well. So we have a little bit of a hybrid shita when it comes to that. And the truth is, it depends on the different cases in halacha are treated differently. But in principle, we do accept this concept of Shabbos Goremes. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. So we'll say, remember again, one of the machlokas we had in the Mishnah was what do you need in order to have a mechitza? So if you remember, who was it who said Shasi Arif? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda said that in order for mechitza to be good, you need a shesi v'arif, right? You need like a crisscross, like a lattice work. You need a horizontal and vertical material. And the Rabbanon say, no, all you need is one or the other. So the Gemara says, Hainu Tanakama. But one second, the Tanakama said the same thing. So the Gemara says, Ika benayo yochid b'yishuv. Oh, the fundamental distinction between the Mobid Arbosai, between the case of a yochid in an inhabited area. Now what does this mean, Abosai? So remember, the Mishnah was talking about the use of inferior mechitzos, right? We were using lavud to create realities. So the machlokus between the Rabbanon and the Tanakama lies in the following case. The Rabbanon and the Tanakama agree that the use of inferior mechitzos is not limited to a shayara, right? Not limited to the case of a caravan, but even a yochid could go ahead and use this inferior mechitza. The shayla is, when can a yochid use the inferior mechitza? So the Gemara wants to suggest that this is a machlokes between the Tanakhama and the Rabbanon. According to one opinion, the yochid could only use the inferior mechitzos when he's in a state of shayara. What does that mean? When he's traveling. But if yochid is home, right, in a place where he has access to make a regular mechitza, then what? Then he can't go ahead and use the inferior mechitza. Whereas the other opinion says, no, the license for yochid to use his inferior mechitzos is when? Whenever he wants. Okay. Mishnah. I will say again, now this is actually very interesting. It's all very interesting, but this is even more interesting than the previous stuff that was very interesting. So the Mishnah says the following: Arba'a Dvarim Pachu B'Machareh. There are four things that Chazal. I will say, so just so you understand the flow of the Mishnah is. So once the Mishnah started speaking about Shayara, people traveling, and certain leniencies that exist. Still there? Certain leniencies that exist when traveling. So the Gemara now is going to speak about other circumstances where there are leniencies. Where there are leniencies for travel for people who are out on the road. So the Gemara says the following. The Mishnah says the following: Arba Dvarim Pachu B'Machareh. I'm happy to see that the roads from Pickwick weren't closed yet.
2 hours
delayed. Delayed opening, yeah. We're 25 seconds delayed. So the Mishnah says the following: Arba Dvarim Pachu B'Machareh. So listen to this. There were four things that the rabbis exempted by a machane. In this case over here, machane means an army camp. Right, when soldiers go out to war, there are four things, the four areas of halacha that the rabbis relaxed. Number one, mevi'in eitzim mikol makom. Number one, they could take wood. They could take wood from anywhere. We'll see exactly what that means. And with Pashas, they don't have to worry about gezel. They don't have to worry about theft. All right. Mevi'in eitzim mikol makom. Number two, p'tur mirechitzas yadayim. They don't have to wash their hands. No washing. Umi demai, they're permitted to eat demai. But I also remember, what is demai? Demai is always easy to remember because it's a contraction. Da mai, what is this? If demai refers to food that you don't know if it's been tithed or not, if you've taken chumas and mitzvahs from it. So normally you can't eat demai without tithing it again. For the soldiers, you can go ahead and take and you can eat demai. We'll say Yitzayin Amud Aleph, the bottom, the Mishnah towards the bottom. Umila Ari. And they don't have to make an Eruv. They don't have to make an Eruv. So we'll say, so this is really interesting. So the Gemara says, Tanra Avonon, Machane Hayotis L'Milchamas HaRashus. So first of all, what are we talking about? So the Braisa says that if you have an army, the camp of the army, that's going out for Milchamas HaRashus. Milchamas HaRashus, we'll say, means an optional war. There are two different types of wars that a Jewish army wages. One is a Milchemes Mitzvah. So what's an example? Milchemes Mitzvah is like the war against Amalek. Milchemes Mitzvah is like the war to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And there's a Milchemes Rishus. Milchemes Rishus means an optional war. So for example, let's say David HaMelech waged many Milchemes Rishus to expand the territorial borders of Eretz Yisrael. He wasn't commanded to wage those wars, but he was, as a king, he's permitted to declare war. Then, so if you have an army that goes out from Milchemes Rishus, Mutharin Begezel Eitzim Yevashim, they're permitted to go out and take dried firewood, even if it belongs to someone else. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema Omer, Afchonim b'chol makom. Right? And Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema says they can also camp wherever they want. Wherever they want. And wherever Chas Shalom a soldier is killed, he acquires the right to be buried in that very area. Says the Gemara, Mutarn Begezla Eitzim Yveshim, they're permitted to go ahead and literally steal dried wood. It must mean, it means they can just take dried firewood from wherever they want. I want to be clear. This doesn't mean going into someone's house, right? This means that in the fields they could collect from wherever they want. So the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Haita kanta di Yoshua haba. Yoshua already was metaking this. What did Yoshua say to Amar Mar? Asara tenoim hisna Yoshua shiz. So Yoshua made 10 conditions for settling Eretz Yisrael. And one of the conditions was, Shihu marin b'charshin umelaktin eitzim misado seyan. So we'll say one of the conditions Yoshua made is that everyone is permitted to collect firewood in the forest. We'll say, what does that mean? I own the forest. One of the conditions for selling Eretz Yisrael is that although the forest might be individual property, nevertheless, anyone can gather firewood from the forest. What's the logic behind that? Since we assume that people don't normally harvest the stuff that's in their forest. Forest is not normally the harvested land. Therefore, one of the conditions that Yoshua put in place for settling the land is, although, again, the forest is privately owned, anyone could collect firewood. So the Gemara says, it's not a kiddush then by the army. Yoshua said, anyone could do this. To which the Gemara says, no. Here's the difference. Hasam behizmi vihigi. So what did Yoshua allow? That's hizmi vihigi rabosa are low-lying bushes. Low-lying bushes. So when it came to the low-lying bushes, that's when Yehoshua allowed you to go ahead and collect the dried wood from the low-lying bushes. Hocha b'shar eitzim. But the army could even collect wood even from other trees. Inami, other possibility is hasam b'mechubaret. What did Yehoshua allow you to do? Yehoshua allowed you to take branches that were still attached. Hocha b'telushin. But what is the army permitted to do? The army is permitted to take branches that are detached. And we'll say, what's the chap over there? That when it's detached, usually, again, firewood that's collected would usually be from detached wood. So I might have thought that, again, you could only take it from attached wood, because, again, that's not really only to be used for firewood immediately, but detached wood, maybe the owner has in mind that he's going to use it, so the army is even permitted to go out and take detached wood. Or, inami, hasam belachin hacha b'yaveshim. Or third possibility is that Yoshua allowed you to take moist wood. The army is even permitted to take what? Is even permitted to take dried out firewood. Okay. Rabbi Huda ben Tema Omer Af Chonim b'chamakom u'bemakom shenergim sham nikbarim. Rabbi Huda said that their army is permitted to camp wherever they want, and the place where they are killed, they acquire that area for burial. Pshita, the Gemara says, meis mitzvahu u'meis mitzvah kone mekomo. We'll say it's actually very interesting. The Gemara makes the assumption that someone killed in battle is a meis mitzvah. Is a meis mitzvah, and therefore a meis mitzvah is buried wherever he's killed. Right? The meis mitzvah, one of the Ashurashi points out, echad miyutinan shesni Yoshuahu, one of the 10 conditions that Yoshua made when entering into Eretz Yisrael is that a meis mitzvah is buried wherever he is killed. He acquires that area upon which he is killed as a burial plot. So I'll say that literally means even if a meis mitzvah is killed in my backyard, right? Suddenly again he acquires that area to be buried in. So the Gemara says no. Lo tzricha afagav de is lekovrin. The case over here is not a meis mitzvah. Right? The case over here is where the soldier has someone to bury him. Rashi says, sheyesh lo yorshin. He has people who will inherit him. Disanya, because that's what the Brisa says. Ezuhu meis mitzvah. What is the case of a meis mitzvah? Kol she'ein lo kovrin. Anyone who does not have someone to bury him. Anyone who does not have someone to bury him. Kore, but if he calls out v'achirim onin. But and others answer, Elcher Onan also, Ein Zemeis Mitzvah. We'll say, what does this mean? That literally calls that. It means that when he's in need, if there are others who are able to help him, that person is not a Meis Mitzvah. So if we'll say, when does a Meis Mitzvah come to Makomo? That's literally when there's no one. There's no one. But in this case over here, the soldier's not a Meis Mitzvah. But despite that, the soldier's not a Meis Mitzvah. Nevertheless, what? He still acquires the place on which he is killed as a makom kavura. No. It literally when there's family. That's why Rashi points out over here, yarshin. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, "Umeis mitzvah kana makomo." Now, I will say that the Gemara challenges this assertion for a moment. It says, "Is that true that a meis mitzvah actually acquires the area on which he's killed as a burial place?" But we learned, "Hamotzi meis mutl besach misrachya." if you find a dead body in the structure, we'll say structure is the street. Street, public thoroughfare. Mifaneo liyom in astracha. You move it to the right of the public thoroughfare. O lismol astracha. Or to the left of the thoroughfare. But what? You don't bury it mamish on the street. Sadeh bor. If you have, if let's say you find a mace mitzvah, you find a corpse on a fallow field, or usadenir, or in a plowed field, mifanehu lesadebor. So we'll say in that case again, for example, if let's say you were to find the corpse on a plowed field, you would try to move it to a fallow field, right? If you have a choice between where to bury it, because obviously we'd rather, you know, it's a little bit easier for the farmer if he doesn't have to have a corpse buried in his field. In a fallow field and a plowed field, take it to the fallow field. Sedei nir v'sedei zera. If you have a choice between a plowed field and a field that's already been planted, mefaneu l'sedei nir, you take it to the plowed field. Hayu shtehen niros, shtehen zros, shtehen boros. What if both fields? What if both fields were plowed, or both fields were planted, or both fields were fallow? Then what? I mean, it was like, if your choice is the same, then what? Mefanehu. You could take the Meis Mitzvah and bury him wherever you want. So we'll say, what do we see from here? What do we see from here? That Meis Mitzvah is not Kana Makomo. Right? If it's really true that Meis Mitzvah Kana Makomo, right, that a Meis Mitzvah acquires the place over which he is killed as his burial place, then where do you bury him? There. What is the Braisa telling us? The Braisa is telling us that pretty much, you know, you have a little bit of a choice. You want to hear, you want more sun, more shade. Fallow field, planted field, seems to be again that you're moving the Meis Mitzvah around, which would seem to contradict the idea that Meis Mitzvah Kana Makomo, to which the Gemara says, no, it's a very interesting case. I will say, Amar Rabbi B'Hacha V'Hacha, what's the case over here? Listen to this. B'Meis Muto Al HaMeitzar. So I will say, the case we're talking about over here is where the person died, the corpse is lying across the road, literally straddling two boundaries. I will say, what's the Pshat? Take a look at Rashi. B'Meis Muto Al HaMeitzar. Shemushka berochav haderech. The mace is literally lying across the width of the road. Mimeitzar lameitzar, between one boundary and the next. Mitoch shenitan reshus lifnosu mipnei kohanim. Ve'osei taros shelo yahilu alav. Mefaneu lechol ruach shetzus. Listen to this. Yes, mace mitzvah kana makomo, 100%. But Rabosai, if somebody dies and the body is lying across the width of the road, let's say perpendicular to the road, right, across the width of the road, you can't bury the body like that. Why can't you bury the body like that? Because everybody who walks that road then is going to become what? He's going to become Tomei. Because also remember, when you walk, leaving aside the laws of Tum and Tara, we're assuming right now, well, not leaving aside, but we're assuming right now that if you walk over a corpse, you automatically become Tomei. We'll say sometimes that's true, sometimes it's not true, but for now let's assume that it's true. So Lameisa, the Gemara says, if there's a mace that's across the road, you can't bury it there. You can't bury it there because you're going to compromise the rabbin. That's what the Bryce is talking about. So once already you have a mace that you have to move, then what? Then what? Then you can suddenly begin to take into account all of these different things. Then the mace, you can already begin to go ahead and say, okay, well, now that I have to move it. So, okay, if I have a choice between a fallow field and a plowed field, I'm going to take it to the fallow field. Or between a planted field and a fallow field, and a plowed, take it to the plowed field. So then once I had the license and the obligation to move it, then I could decide exactly where I wanted to bury it. Weiter, says the Gemara, U'pitur mirachisos yadar. Both says, listen, it's very halachal myself. And the army is also potter from hand washing. Amar Abaye, lo shanu elamayim mishonim. This only applies to washing before you eat. Avamayim achronim chova. But the army has to wash mayim achronim. Right, listen to this. Amar Abchia barav ashi. Remember, mayim achronim is the water that we wash, is the washing we do before we bench. So the Gemara says, why is there an obligation for mayim achronim? Because there's this thing called sodomite salt, which apparently is very powerful, very caustic, and again, it can cause blindness. If you touch the melech stomis and you touch your hands and you touch your eyes, you could, God forbid, cause blindness. The mayim achronim was done in order to ensure that I remove any melech stomis from my hand. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, umishtachecha kekurta bekura. It was literally what that means. Abaye says you could find even a kurta. A kurta means like a granule, right? A little bit in a core, which is a large amount. In other words, that's saying that melech stomis is harmful, even if what? Even in very, very, very small measure. Amali Rav Acha Brei Amari Amali Rav Acha Brei Rava Rav Ashi. So Rav Acha Brei Rava says Rav Ashi, Kail Milchamai. What happens if you're not eating, but you're just measuring salt? But you're just measuring salt. Do you also have to wash your hands after measuring out salt? To which he answered, Amar Le Ha Lomi Boy. That's not even a question. There's a different teaching style. You know, some teachers like to say every question is an excellent question. Right? There's some teachers like to say that was ridiculous. Right? So this was one of these, that was ridiculous. Of course, if you're measuring, what's the shaila? If anytime you're handling, it's not a din in eating. This is a din in handling salt. So anytime you're handling salt, you're going to have to wash my ochron. So this is actually quite astounding. See, here you have Chazal saying that the army doesn't have to wash before they eat, but they have to wash my machronim. So look at the top tosis just quickly. Tells us my machronim chova. So the obvious question is: whenever you see a gemara that seems to be so black and white, my machronim is a chova. And yet, many people today don't wash my machronim. So right, so why? Right, and there are certain, like for example, yekas are known not to wash my machronim. The truth is, today really, the people who wash my machronim are those who somehow trace their lineage a little bit more to Hasidic backgrounds. So right, why? So why is it? Why is it that there's no? Why is it that people are not worried about my machronim today? So Tosas writes, Achshav lo nogu b'may machronim. Today people aren't really nogu b'may machronim. The ein melech stomis matzui beinenu. For the simple reason, says Tosas, is because this caustic sodomite salt is not really found among us. So because of that, inami lefi she'ein anu regilin letabel etzba'osinu b'melech achar achila. This is actually interesting. Furthermore, apparently, they used to actually dip their fingers in salt after the meal or during the course of the meal. So Tosas says because of that, then because they were dipping their fingers in salt, that's when you had a real concern about touching your eyes. So Tosas says either A, because there's no melech stomis, that's number one, or B, because our eating habits have changed and we don't really dip our fingers in salt. Therefore, says Tosas, that's why many don't do my machorim today. I'll tell you what, there's another reason for my machronim as well, which is brought down in brachas, or shulchan is down, which is nikius. That is just a din of cleaning your hands prior to birkas hamazon. It's a din of ready. It's kind of like we know last time in the halach of timin chamayr, we spoke about that you should wash your hands before you did bedikas chametz as a hachana lemitzvah. So to someone to suggest that that's my machronim. My machronim is hachana lemitzvah. You're preparing yourself for birkas hamazon. So even if there's no melech stomis, and even if I'm not dipping my fingers in salt. So that's why, again, that's why many continue this halacha, even in the clear absence of melech stomis, and rather today it's done really als nikius. It's done as a way of ensuring an additional level of cleanliness prior to the recitation of birkas hamazon.
Is it dipping fingers in salt or in oil, because it's hard to wash that off with water?
I don't know. He says it over here. Had he not said those last words of achar achila, I would have assumed that he's just around the course of a meal, people would dip their fingers in salt. You know, you can still see this today. Some people still have like a salt dish, you know, where you take. But he says, achar achilas. So I don't know, maybe that is to remove some of the schmutz. I don't know. So says the Gemara. I mean, see, I'm not sure for our purposes it even really matters. What his point is at some point in time during the meal, they were actually putting their hands in salt. Because we don't do that today, nice, you don't have to worry. Weiter. Says the Gemara, Umi demai. So we'll say, so again, and the army can also eat demai. So he says, the Gemara, Disnan, Ma'achilin es ha'aniyim demai, ves achsanya demai. You could go ahead and feed demai to the poor, and feed demai to achsanya. Achsanya is a visiting troop. Achsanya is a group of soldiers who are stationed, again, within the city. Amar Rav Huna, Tana Beishamai Orum, in Ma'achilin es ha'aniyim demai. So Rav Huna says, no, you have to teach us differently. Beishamai says, you can't feed poor people demai, you have to tithe it first. Okay, so Rav Huna comes along and says, not everybody agrees with this. It's my focus, Beisham Beisilo. Umi La'arif. And also, the army doesn't have to make an Erev. So the Gemara says, Omri Debe Rabbi Yanai. So they said, Debe Rabbi Yanai said the following. Lo Shanu Ella Erev Chatzeros. What type of Erev do they not have to make? That's an Erev Chatzeros. Aval Erev Tchumin Chayovin. But they have to make an Erev Tchumen. Well, remember, Erev Tchumen is an Erev that allows you to go ahead and carry for a certain distance. The Tani Rabbi Chiya, Lokin al Eruvei Tchumen Divar Torah. The Rabbi Chiya says that you get, if you violate the Tchum, right? 2,000 Amos, we'll get into this. If you violate the Tchum, you get Malkus, because you have violated an Isra D'Oraisa. Maskif lo Rabbi Yonason v'chi Lokin alav Sheba'al. So Rabbi Yonason says, one second, the assumption over here that the lav over here is al yetzei ish min komo biyom haShabbos. The person should not leave his domicile on Shabbos. That's the assumption. That's the lav for leaving your tchum. So comes along Rav Acha bar Yaakov and says, do you ever get malchus for a lav that's phrased with al? Well, say what Rav Acha is saying is normally you only get malchus for a lav that's phrased how, with what word? Lo, but not with al. So the Gemara says, are you going to say then when the pasuk says do not turn to the ovos yidor bozo, these are necromancers, right? These were different types of sorcery used to communicate with the dead, and we know that if you do this you violate an istudah and you get malchus. Rabbi Yonas and Hachi Kashima, this is what Rabbi Yonas was worried about. Lav shniti elas haris misas beizdin v'cholav shniti elas haris misas beizdin. Ain lokin alav. So we'll say, listen to this. This is very important. We actually had this before. Every iser d'oraisa that has a death penalty, or I have to say, every iser d'oraisa has two different lavim. One lav is to tell you that it's aser. One lav is to tell you the punishment. So I will say, now the assumption is the lav that tells you that it's aser cannot be used to derive punishment. The assumption is that al yotze yetze ishin komi of Shabbos is the lav shenite and las haras beizdin. Is a lav that has that chiyav misa. So how can you learn out the chiyav malchus from it? So the Gemara says, Amravashi miksiv al yotzi al yetzei ksiv. To which the Gemara says, it doesn't say al yotzi, it doesn't say don't carry, but rather it says al yetzei. Rashi says ve'ein kan lashon hotzas masui. So because again this lav is not written al yotzi, I will say we were also assuming that this lav is the source for the punishment or for the prohibition of carrying in a restricted rishus, to which the Gemara says, since the lashon of the pasuk is al yetzei and not al yotzi, therefore halacha l'maisa it could be used to teach us the isra of tchumen, and therefore coming full circle, that's why Chazal said that as much as we will relax the standards for Erev Chatzeros by the army, because Erev Tchumen is Doraisa, because Tchumen is Doraisa, therefore even the army has to keep the issues of Tchumen. Alright, we'll say Hajra Loch Hamavui. Alright, Hajra, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up Emir Tashem tomorrow. So just a reminder that over Yontif, Emir Tashem Shir is at 8:15. Shir is at 8:15, the first two mornings of Yontif. And the Emir Tashem Cholamayit is a regular schedule with no Mesilas Yesharim, because davening begins at 5. Davening begins at 6:30, so we begin with Tafiyum Emir Tashem 5:45. A good Yantif to everyone. David, have a good day. A good Yantif.
Or is that just because that designates where you're...
No, no, it's really meaning wherever you set up your dira at the onset.
So it's not the same reasoning as... In other words, I know that's the reason.
Absolutely. And in fact, Irtum is one of the areas where we can actually unequivocally say Shabbos Goremes. Correct.